Call the Tax Committee back to order and continue our markup of Senate File 2869. Do we have other amendments? Got some members not here, so. Any members here have other amendments? I don't believe we've got the income tax one yet. Sir Limmer, you got an amendment? You going to have one on the floor? I think in fairness to the members that aren't here, I know there's some other amendments drafted. We need to make sure they get an opportunity to offer them. Maybe we'll have staff call their offices and see if they're watching us on television. Senator Skoy, aren't you disappointed we didn't get our sparsity aid levy for our schools?
You know, Mr. Chair, I am very disappointed, but I think it's such a good idea that we'll be bringing that up again sometime this session.
Senator Larson, do you have an amendment? We're looking for one of our members that might have an amendment.
I don't have an amendment, Mr. Chair.
Senator Orban, do you have one?
Well, Mr. Chair, just the A30 amendment, but we're on hold on that.
I think we're on hold until we get more information on the income tax amendment. Senator Limmer?
Yes. Mr. Chair, I do have an amendment that I'm not going to present now. I wanted to review it. It was in light of the changing population, a small town that has no room for economic development or to build a deeper tax base, a little town in my area called Hanover. But it's probably got the same problem of a lot of little towns. They've extended out to their boundary lines with residential construction. And since it's an isolated town, they don't have the means to expand their tax base through commercial investment. And I know we did some changes this year on this bill, but I wanted to analyze it first to see maybe this particular town's problem has been resolved because of our changes in this bill. But if it looks like it's something different, I probably will be talking with you before we go to the floor.
Do they have an aid problem, state aid problem, or what do they have?
Yeah, it gets into the local government aid issue. And disparities.
I'll have to look.
Are they in Anoka County?
I think we could do
no,
that.
No, they are half in Hennepin and half in Wright.
What's the population?
Senator Sindrum.
Mr. Chair, as long as we have a minute or so, there's a question that I have and people in the audience have, and maybe even at the table, on Article 11, Section 7, and just what does that really mean? It seems to have to do with the manufacture of drugs.
What page number?
It's on page 128. I have the same question. Somebody from the department here? It's in one of the department articles. Page 128, Section 7.
I guess there are no answers.
I think, Senator Sindrum, I think there some of the department people are conferring behind you.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I'm Pat Finnegan from the Revenue Department.
Mr. Finnegan, page 128, Section 7. Department's suggested change relates to manufactured drugs that have not been subject to tax.
Mr. Chair, this, I believe, was a Minnesota Care Use Tax clarification. And what the department was trying to do was clarify that when no wholesaler was involved, that the tax was imposed on the cost of the manufacturer to produce the drug. So it was clarifying language in the use tax of how the tax should be computed.
Where drugs are bought straight from the manufacturer, not from there's not a wholesaler involved?
Yes.
So it's not a tax increase, it's just where it's assessed?
And how it's assessed, yes.
Senator Sindra?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the witness.
Thank you, Mr. Finnegan. Mr. Finnegan, do we know how much money are we talking about? Because I don't think the department scored it.
Mr. Chair, I don't think the department looked at this as a money loser or a money gainer. It was just a clarification. I mean, it's the way it's the way it's administered currently.
Kelleher, do you have a comment on it?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Tom Kelleher. I'm here representing Baxter Healthcare International. They're a large drug company based out of Illinois. And I was told yesterday when we started looking at this that in Baxter's specific case, a wholesaler is always involved or a distributor. In no case would my client distribute drugs directly to a patient. So what we're trying to figure out, and we have people back in Illinois trying to look at this as well, is under what circumstances would this language apply to where the tax would accrue to a manufacturer? And then also, it on line 128.13, it talks about the subject to tax equal to the cost incurred by the person to manufacture the drugs. And that's, I think, part of our opinion is that's just an odd place to calculate what the tax is. It's prior to retail price. It's prior to marketing, research, development costs, and so on and so forth. So, but bluntly, Mr. Chairman, we're a little confused about when this would apply and how on a manufacturer.
Mr. Chair, the way we read it, I don't think the tax is imposed on the manufacturer. It's imposed on the pharmacy importing it into the state here, and it's a use tax. It's like a sales use tax, and the way to calculate the tax would be the cost basis that the manufacturer had. That's what the rate would be applied against. It's not a tax on the manufacturer.
You want to get that wrong?
Yeah.
Mr. Walton.
Mr. Chairman, members, I have read this about 24 times now. I'm still having trouble putting the words together. The explanation we got used the sales and use tax language that I'm used to, where you identify an event and you identify a payer in that. But the reason that the department just gave seems to be taken care of in the existing language that just precedes this new language. And that would be the situation where you go around wholesale drug distribution. When you get it, you pay it. This literally written would create two instances of the same thing. One, on a manufacturer, and I guess that's not the intent. We just heard that. I'm just trying to read the language. And secondly, when there's a recipient that is outside of the tax that I think is contained in the same statute in Subdivision 3, so that you could potentially get hit twice. I sense that there's an attempt to plug a hole here, but I don't think this language does it.
Mr. Chair, I think the intent was to apply the tax when there's not a wholesale drug distributor involved. So you wouldn't have a tax under Subdivision 3, so that preceding paragraph wouldn't apply. And we're just trying to say that in that type of situation, how the tax would be calculated.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I read the preceding language to cover the case when a wholesale drug distributor is not involved, which case, if they were, you'd pay the Subdivision 3 tax. That if you do not use a wholesale drug distributor, then you're subject to a tax that's further specified in this section. So that whole, I do believe, is Subdivision 3 is the distributor tax. Subdivision 4 current law is when you go around a distributor and use some other methods of importation. And then this new language appears to be partly redundant to that situation, and maybe it's a different, maybe they're trying to plug a different way of doing the same thing, but I'm not the dumbest person in this room. Well, maybe in this room, but I have studied this many, many times, and I think it needs some. First, we need to know what its intention is, and then we need to.
Well, I think we heard that from the department, but the provision says that if you're not subject to the tax under Subdivision 3, then you're subject to it here. So I don't think it's fair to say that somehow the department's trying to collect twice.
Well, you're right. Subdivision 4 provides a tax that you wouldn't pick up in Subdivision 3. And I think to some extent the new language does the same thing, only in a different way. You could meet both the requirements of the new language and the existing Subdivision 4 language, it appears to me.
I think the intent of the new language was to cover the situation when there wasn't a wholesale drug distributor involved. The question had been raised with the department how the tax is calculated in that situation. I mean, normally there would be a wholesale drug distributor involved, yeah. And so the current language in the law, I think, would cover that. But what we were trying to do is just cover the situation when there wasn't a wholesale drug distributor.
Mr. Kelleher?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to inquire of the department under what circumstances has this occurred to cause this clarifying language to be needed? Is it something that's a perceived hole that needs to be filled, or was it an example of a manufacturer bypassing the wholesaler or distributor, or in some cases a home health care agency, to avoid the tax to necessitate this language being in the bill before you?
Mr. Chair, I don't have an answer to that. I don't work in the Minnesota Care Tax normally, but we could find that out. I think it was a question that one of the auditors presented to the to the legal staff. So,
Senator Sundrum, we okay for now?
Yes,
I am,
Mr.
Thank
Chair.
You. Thank
and,
you.
But it does seem like maybe some further work needs to be done on this.
Right, we'll try to get once we get to conference. If we can have the department get us a little further rationale, I think that would be helpful.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Does anybody else have an amendment? Senator Larson?
Well, Mr. Chair, on page 109, I want to inquire about Section 15 is the provision that relates to the city of Dayton, which originally was the bill that I introduced on the Brockton Interchange. That apparently it's been pointed out to me that it also includes a portion of Hassan Township, and that reference should be made in there as well. So I don't know if council can provide us an amendment to put that in the form it needs to be. That would be helpful.
Mr. Chairman, members, that would be on page 109, line 9, after the semicolon, insert Hassan Township semicolon. Page 109, line 11, after Dayton, comma, insert or for Hassan Township, comma, and after the second city, insert or the town. On page 109, line 12, after city, insert or the town. And on page 109, line 14, after is effective, insert for the city of Dayton. On line 15, after the period, insert this section is effective for Hassan Township upon compliance by the governing body of the town of Hassan with the requirements of Minnesota Statute Section 645.021.
Mr. Chair, I'd move that amendment.
Any discussion? If not, all in favor of the Larson oral amendment, please say aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails. The oral amendment is adopted. Other amendments. Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to offer the A33 amendment, which is This is similar, Mr. Chair, to the alternative amendment that I had offered earlier to the Ortman amendment that simply eliminated earmarking for LGA. This simply makes the use of LGA for NRP and other purposes permissive to Minneapolis and St. Paul. Goal is not enamored with this idea, but I am enamored with the idea of being able to propel a conversation into conference committee about NRP and other things in the conference committee. So I'd like to at least, with the indulgence of the committee, be able to allow that to happen.
Senator Moy, what do you think?
Mr. Chair, I thank Senator Dipple for offering the amendment. And I would support it.
Council brought to my attention on line 1.8 the word potion should be portion.
It's kind of a boiling potion. Some call it making sausage that we do.
It happens when we're on the fly. Senator Dipple incorporates the oral amendment to spell portion correctly on line 1.8. Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I understand what the goal here is. I don't support the method. Don't believe that the Senate or Tax Committee or the Senate or the House and Senate Conference Committee should be calling these cities to the table. And I feel oddly empowered by Senator Pogemiller to say that I don't believe this is good policy. It's not a good precedent. And if it can happen in these cities for good reasons, it can happen in other cities for bad reasons. And it can happen in these cities for bad reasons and the wrong reasons. And I don't think we should go here. So I hope members will oppose this amendment.
Any other discussion? On the A33 amendment, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Contrary, no?
No.
The motion prevails. The A33 is adopted. Other amendments? You're missing two. Senator Pogemiller and Senator Marty. We made an effort to contact them. I sure hope they don't have an amendment to the floor because we overlooked them here. Maybe while we wait for them, we can take some public testimony on the bill as amended. And then we'll give those two members at least an opportunity for an amendment when they get here. Does anybody want to testify on the omnibus tax bill? Please state your name and anybody you might represent for the record.
My name is Mary O'Connor. I'm from Brooklyn Center, and I'm a council member in Brooklyn Center. For 2 months, I've been working on my family's income tax returns. They are confusing and difficult. I recommend a flat tax with no credits or deductions except for dependents. I believe sales taxes should be gradually eliminated. They are regressive. Property taxes should charge the same class rate for all, homeowners, businesses, farmers, etc., because property taxes are based on market value, so they are not regressive. Everyone should pay the same rate on the value of their property. I have my property tax statement for 2008. My property taxes should be $8,000, but they are under $3,000 because the state pays over $5,000 as aids and credits. Plus, I may be eligible for two more refunds, including the circuit breaker. Also, my taxable market value is lower than my estimated market value, so I get a benefit there. Then the state gives my city over $1 million in local government aid in 2007 and again in 2008. That didn't stop my city council from raising property taxes both years. If the state didn't give so much aid to cities, counties, and individuals, you could greatly reduce the sales tax. If citizens had to pay the real cost of their cities and counties they would elect officials who would cut these costs. My city uses tax increment financing to purchase land and businesses. The buildings are demolished and the land is sold to another business for $1 or an abatement. This is unfair to our citizens and to other businesses. The real problem is all levels of government have gotten too big and spend way too much. All we need from government are roads, bridges, utilities, parks, basic education, and public safety. The rest is best handled by citizens. Thank you.
Thank you. Would anybody else like to testify on the omnibus tax bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Susan Dior, and I represent the Minnesota Association of Realtors. First, we'd like to thank you for not adding the 50% increase in the mortgage registry and deed tax, and my testimony is strictly to that particular point for the additional mortgage registry and deed tax surcharges. We are opposed to those additional surcharges. We obviously could not be a worse time for the real estate industry to add a $4.4 million regressive property transfer tax onto those properties. As we all know, the housing values in Minnesota are decreasing. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac just put out a 300-page report, of which six pages of zip codes were for Minnesota for declining housing values, requiring an additional 5% down immediately for those declining housing values. This surcharge will also usurp the efforts you just passed in the federal conformity for the for those people who have had to sell their houses on short sales. And finally, we question the need for this particular surcharge for the Superfund sites. I know this is not the forum for that discussion, but just in our Superfund alone, Minnesota has already spent $64 million in the past 5 years to clean up polluted land sites in Minnesota, and that's just one particular area. So with that, I appreciate you allowing me to testify today. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Berger.
Mr. Chair and members, for the record, my name is Tom Hesse. I'm with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I guess I won't bore you with my usual foreign operating corporation testimony that I've given the last several years. I just want to raise 2 points with respect to that language that I think should be addressed. And first is Article 3, Section 5. This is the audit authority for the Department of Revenue on economic substance. We think that is too broad and unnecessary. A few years ago, the IRS chief counsel said that there really is no need to codify an economic substance doctrine at the federal level, and we think that should apply also at the state level. This will certainly lead to more litigation, and again, we oppose that a section of law of the bill. Second, Article 3, Section 7, which reads, it is the intent of the legislature that the provisions of Sections 1, 3, 4, and 5 must not be construed as supplanting any existing Minnesota law. That is, I think, at least to me, very strange language. It calls into question whether or not we're making any law change with respect to foreign operating corporations at all. If the definitional change in Section 1 of the corporate income tax article is changing the, getting rid of the property and payroll thresholds to qualify for a foreign operating corporation and replacing it with the active business income text, and we have this section that says none of the Sections 1, 3, 4, and 5 should be construed as supplanting existing law. Do we have the thresholds? Do we not have the thresholds? Is the active foreign business income text applicable? What do we do? So I just want to call that to your attention. I don't think it's necessary. The effective date on each of the provisions in 1, 3, 4, and 5 should be enough to delineate which language is effective for which tax years. The second issue I want to raise with the committee is the statewide property tax. And as usual, we oppose fixing the rate of the statewide property tax at any level this year, the 2009 tax rate. Again, this will cause over time a significant increase in Minnesota business property taxes statewide. One other issue with respect to the statewide property tax provision, maybe two, the exemption for a couple of types of properties are eliminated. One, airport property, and the second, electric generating equipment. Both of those will, at least the electric generating equipment provision, will add to the cost of electricity for customers and businesses, being a major customer of utilities, especially in certain areas, will feel that burden. I wasn't around when the initial exemptions were granted. At least I don't recall the debate when the initial exemptions were granted, so I'm not exactly sure why they have to be eliminated at this point. Third issue, the independent contractor provision, Article 3, Section 6. And my understanding of this provision is that it eliminates a safe harbor under federal law for the determination of independent contractors through the IRS code. And some of our members have raised a couple of issues that this could create. Do employers, if this were to become law, would employers have to file a W-2 form for federal purposes and a 1099 for Minnesota purposes? Because we might have two different distinctions, an employee under federal law and an independent contractor under state law. And second, employees are eligible for many fringe benefits, medical care, cafeteria plans, et cetera. And that's typically keyed off of a federal definition of employer. So I just want to raise the issues. That issue might need more study, in our view, before it would take effect. And then finally, the June accelerated sales tax provisions. We understand that you have to use some mechanisms to address the budget deficit. We'd hope that over time that the June accelerated sales tax provision can be reduced and eliminated while recognizing that you have to deal with some ways to balance the budget in the short term. Thank you, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions, Member?
Thank you, Mr. Hesse.
Would anybody else like to testify on the tax bill?
I wanted to read a letter, if I could, to the committee that I received in my Senate office as testimony today on this bill from a Mr. Jorson of Hamburg, Minnesota. And I'm only going to read parts because this is it's a very angry letter. It was written 5 pages, all in caps. I don't know him, but I received this in my Senate office. It says, "Dear Ms. Ortman, here I am, unemployed, and writing you this letter. Oh, I'm sorry, that's too harsh. I mean, I'm in between jobs. I was wondering what is going on with our lawmakers in this state. People are losing their jobs. Where companies are moving out of state, I'm sure it doesn't matter. They don't have the big ticket item names like Northwest or Ford. I worked for Mammoth Inc., Chaska, Minnesota, now operating out of Missouri. It must be nice to go to a job and vote yourself a raise and turn around and jack up prices on everything and put the burden on the people who go to work every day to try to make ends meet. I was born in an era of common sense. When things were okay then and are not now, and things that were not okay back then are okay now. In between back then and now, everything has reversed itself. It's called common sense. Where did it go?" I'm going to skip a portion here that got rather angry. "Another item, our money in this state is being wasted, let's face it, wasted big time. While everybody goes to work every day to a real job, who has a job left? The good old lobbyists in this state have all this time and money to hang out at the Capitol to whine a lot and bribe our leaders until they get their way so they can take it to the taxpayer again. Case in point, the Twin Stadium. Our politicians knew it would not go through if left to a vote by the taxpayers, so they just pushed it on through. Seems like the politicians in this state think that everyone here has short memories, fat wallets, and were born with silver spoons." Again, I'll delete that section.
The truth of the matter is, as taxpayers are getting tired of the way things are going and decisions that are being made. Maybe if the governor was presented everything as a fee, he would sign it then. Taxes, fees, they're both the same. The taxpayers in this state are not stupid, and we're getting fed up. And again, I'll leave out certain expletives. But I'm getting more and more letters like that, more and more emails, more and more phone calls from people that are getting very angry at what's happening or not happening here in St. Paul. And I think this bill could be an opportunity for some real tax relief.
Would anybody else like to testify on the tax bill?
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Gary Carlson. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities. I'd like to speak briefly on three portions of the bill, actually two portions of the bill, because you now have said you're going to hold another hearing on some of the Job Z changes. So I think we'll reserve our comments. I will reserve my comments specifically on that for that hearing date. I'd like to thank you for Article 1, Sections 1 through 15 of the bill that includes the, as we call it, the Unity Proposal on LGA. We've worked hard with the Minnesota Association of Small Cities, with the North Metro Mayors Association, the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, the Association of Metropolitan Municipalities, and the cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul to develop a proposal that would help bring some clarity and concise effort on behalf of the cities to the LGA debate. Also like to thank you for including Section 19 that includes the study of LGA. We think that this is a work in progress. We'd like to come back and work with you to design a more comprehensive long-term solution to LGA. And just a reason for that is that we know that there will be a lot of information available to us with the next decennial census that we think will help us craft a more permanent LGA solution. So we do appreciate Article 1, Sections 1 through 15 and Section 19. And then secondly, I'd like to speak in support of another provision in the bill that is supported by League policy dealing with the class rate changes for public utility property. We have weighed in support of the utility host cities on that particular provision, and we do support Article 2, Section 17 of the bill as well.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Steve Peterson. I'm here on behalf of the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. We are here also to support, or give our strong support for the LGA and the Unity proposal that was put into this bill. I will make a brief statement on the Job Z portion because I understand we are going to be looking into this into the future, but the Coalition does support the continuation of Job Z. While we understand that we might want to make some changes and put some safeguards on the tool, we would like to keep the tool in the toolbox. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Other testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Joe Matthews with the Association of Minnesota Counties. I think the city has already made some comments that I'll echo, but I just wanted to thank the committee for the increase in the county program aid. That's our version of LGA, and it's important to offset the costs we have for carrying out the mandates that were handed down by the state. Also, I want to make a special note that the inflationary increase is really important for counties because it takes a lot of the volatility out of the formula that we have. So for the smaller counties in the rural areas, that's a key provision. Also, I just want to say we also supported last year the utility class rate increase. We're supporting that again this year. And finally, the bovine TV is something that's really important for counties, especially not just in the northwestern corner of the state, but other areas that have significant beef and cattle interests. There is one concern I know Mr. May is going to refer to, and I'll turn over to him regarding the 60-day rule.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Tom May, Hennepin County Assessor. We do have concerns on Article 2, Section 25 that deals with the 60-day rule and the income and expense information that's provided on tax court litigation. The Minnesota Association of Assessing Officers and the Minnesota County Attorneys Association oppose the language that's now in the bill, but I want to clarify that we are working with Senator Larson and with the bar to come up with some agreeable language that we can move forward. So just want to go on record.
Thank you, Mr. Mann. I just want to make it clear I'm not wed to the language that's in the bill. If we can work out some kind of compromise to add a little bit of additional flexibility, then I think we all can claim victory. So appreciate your willingness to continue to work on it, and it'll be a subject of the conference committee, I'm certain.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Jill Larson with the Minnesota Business Partnership. Many of my comments are similar to Mr. Hesse's, so I'll skip some of them. Wanted to comment on the business property tax increases in the bill. We also oppose both of the provisions, the one that sets the rate at a certain level. That will be a huge tax increase for employers starting this year and in the out years. We're also opposed to removing cabins from the statewide levy because that's an additional $35 million or so increased tax that will be placed on employers. So when you add those up, in addition to the property tax increases employers are seeing under current law, it looks like there could be an additional maybe 10% increase when you look at the cumulative effect of some of these changes. So, you know, employers are feeling the impact of the slowing economy just like everybody else is, and this is a pretty big burden to place on them. Mr. Hensley mentioned some of the concerns in the corporate tax area. With respect to the foreign operating corporation language, it looks to us that like the language is almost identical to last year's, with the exception that this proposal does not include the increase in the foreign royalty deduction, and we would like to see that included in the final proposal. We also have concerns about the economic substance language, the vagueness of the language. I think it presents some concerns, and it looks to me like it would just lead to a lot of uncertainty and probably a lot of litigation. And again, we also question the supplant language at the end of that section. Not sure what it means. Some folks even think it might make some of the changes to the FOC language retroactive, and we would not support that. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. Would anybody else like to testify on the tax bill?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pogelman.
I don't get this. Can I just ask, so is the business community testimony that this is really going to be a softball? The House is just going too far on that provision, and Senator Bach has come up with a really fairly reasonable provision?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pogelman, on which provision? On the FOC provision? I would agree the House has gone too far in their bill.
And you just can't go the rest of the way there on that one? I'm just trying to help Mr. Chairman. You know, because the chairman, I don't know if everybody noticed, but the Senate tax bill got a wonderful editorial in the paper of record today.
I heard that, Senator Pogelman, but I haven't read it yet.
Maybe we should get a copy before we leave.
Maybe we should distribute it on the floor when we have a vote. Mr. Horner?
I better shut up. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jack Horner representing Minnesota Multi-Housing Association. We also wish to thank you and the committee. We appreciate the continuing support in the work on the LGA and the county program aid. We like it. Representing rental housing, it provides across-the-board property tax relief. It provides relief to all properties, including renters who tend, on average, to have lower incomes than homeowners. And so we do think that that is a good way to go, and we appreciate the work of the committee on that. Finally, Mr. Chairman, we do have just a bit of concern I want to express regarding the amendment previously adopted, Senator Ortman's amendment regarding the kind of partial exemption for older people who lived in their home for a long time. And I apologize, I've not had a chance to talk with Senator Ortman during the interim, but the recess. But we want to take a close look at that. It's hard to know exactly what the effect is. The committee had thoughtful discussion of it. Particularly at the $40,000 level, and we don't know how many counties would adopt it, so it's hard to know. It might be a very small amendment. Our concern is kind of the precedent of carving out special treatment for special situations rather than across-the-board property tax relief for all properties, and we think we can make the case that renters and rental housing needs it as much as anyone, and so that's our feeling on that. We want to kind of keep a close eye on that amendment as through the process. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Horner. Anybody else like to testify on the tax bill?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Joe Reinberger with Xcel Energy's Tax Department. Thank you for giving me time on your agenda today. I'm here to speak in opposition to the proposed utility property tax increases. The provisions call for a 40% increase in utility class rates and repeal of the generation attached machinery exemption in the state general levy, which means an annual impact in our property tax bill of about $32 million. Xcel opposes enactment of these provisions for three principal reasons. First, the class rate increases in effect continue a revenue stream that was based on inaccurate valuations. The class rate increases eliminate the effect of the Department of Revenue's recently corrected property valuations rule. These changes penalize one group of taxpayers for seeking accurate valuations of their property. It is inconsistent with the state's tax policy goals of uniformity, equity, and transparency. We feel it is reasonable to have asked that our property be accurately valued. However, we recognize that the correction would have had an impact on local government revenues, and we took steps to mitigate it. For years, we chose not to challenge our valuations in court, even though the court was deciding similar cases in favor of the utilities, because we did not want to impose retroactive tax judgments on our communities. Instead, we pursued the rulemaking process, which is prospective and can be implemented flexibly. We supported the 3-year phase-in of the corrected valuation rule. We supported transition aid in the governor's budget. We're invested in our communities. We have thousands of employees who live there, and we've taken steps to mitigate the correction in the utility company valuation rule. We initiated work on revenue stabilization agreements with our most significantly affected communities to make in lieu of tax payments to maintain the revenue stream to them for 10 years after the rule takes effect. We have signed agreements with Red Wing and Goodhue County. Under the agreement, Xcel will fully offset the effect of the valuation rule for 10 years. We believe it is reasonable to ask that our property be accurately assessed by the state. We oppose increasing utility class rates in order to continue a revenue stream that was based on inaccurate property valuations. Second, due to significant ongoing capital investments that we are making in our plants, the new DOR rule is not having the anticipated effect on host community revenues. This is evidenced already in the first year of the new DOR rule when you compare our expected pay 08 taxes against our pay 07 taxes at our five largest plants. Our Prairie Island plant, about a $200,000 decrease. This was from $11 million in pay 08 versus $11.2 in pay 07. Our Sherco plant, about a $500,000 decrease. $8 million pay 08 versus $8.5 million pay 07. Our Monticello plant, a slight decrease in 08, about $5.6 million for both years. Our King plant, $1.1 million increase, $3 million pay 08 versus $1.9 million pay 07. And finally, our Black Dog plant, a $100,000 increase, $1.7 million estimated pay 08 versus $1.6 million in pay 07. Overall, there's an increase in tax at three of our five largest plants for pay 08. In the future, their tax bases will continue to grow. Capital investments at our plants alone in the next few years will add $390 million to the tax base in Monticello, $400 million to the tax base in Red Wing, and $400 million to the tax base in Becker. Statewide, electric utilities have just begun a $1 million expansion of the transmission infrastructure. The analysis of the impact of the new valuation rule has not accounted for any growth in these communities, much less these major additions to their tax bases. And then finally, number three, adding generation-attached machinery to the state general levy would reverse the past 15 years of state tax policy decisions to not expand the personal property tax. The personal property tax was phased out for all other industries in the 1970s. Although it hasn't been eliminated for the utility industry, bipartisan reform efforts have prevented its expansion. Since 1993, every generating plant that has been built in the state has been exempted from the personal property tax, and the 2001 legislature continued that reform by not including electric generating machinery when it enacted the statewide property tax. The repeal of the generation attached machinery exemption would reverse that reform. Mr. Chair and members, thank you for your time. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Mr. Weinberger, just let me say so that I think the days of personal property tax exemptions for utilities on new plants under this tax year are probably coming to an end, especially as they relate to gas. I mean, we're putting too much stress on gas prices by using it to make energy. I just want to make that clear for everybody. We've got some personal property tax exemptions here for some hydro and for some biomass, but future personal property tax exemptions for gas plants are going to have tough pulling. So I just want to make that clear. Just because it's been the precedent since 93, I don't know that we're going to continue it. Thank you, Mr. Weinberg.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Barry Tilley, and I represent the Dakota County Board of Commissioners. And I would like to take the moment to thank you for the Incarnation County program aid, which will help keep down property taxes for the taxpayers in Dakota County. Also, like to thank you for your work, the committee, for the work on the aggregate tax structure that'll increase the amount of tax revenue that will go to the cities and townships that host the aggregate mining operations. Dakota County feels that whatever incentives we can give those cities and townships to help encourage the siting and operations of aggregate mining operations will benefit not only the cities and townships that are located in, but the county of Dakota and the whole region that depends upon a continuous supply of aggregate. We would also like to thank you for the creation of the Environmental Cleanup Fund for Dakota County. Will help us start cleaning up the 2,300 polluted properties that we have in Dakota County and help put them back on the tax rolls or in public use. So thank you very much for your work today.
Thank you, Mr. Tilley.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Mike Ahern, and I'm here on behalf of the four natural gas pipeline companies that have appeared before you before to oppose the pipeline class rate increase. And since I know you're on a short time deadline, I have a statement that kind of repeats previous testimony that I'd like to share with you and urge your taking this thing out of this bill. Thanks.
Would anybody else like to testify on the tax bill? Senator Central.
Mr. Chair, just a comment, and I spoke briefly with Senator Scoy about it. On the LGA addition of $70 million, and referring back to a run that we saw in Property Tax Committee a couple of weeks ago, and I don't think I've seen anything since, but one of the things that I thought at that point was at least of notice was that in my case and in the case of many other small cities in Minnesota, and I'm talking about, you know, the smaller cities. My particular district, two of the cities which are the smallest probably in certainly population, the smallest in tax wealth, certainly probably smallest even in per capita wealth, got zero on that list. And I don't know, apparently we weren't able to fix that, but I would say it would be somewhat difficult to go home with $70 million worth of new LGA money and suggest at least to my two cities and any other cities that are out there, and I know there were a number of them, that you don't get any. You don't, frankly, even get a nickel, you know. And I don't know if there's anything we can do about that or not. But.
Well, Senator Sundrum, I share those concerns, and I expressed them when we had the unity proposal in front of Senator Scoy's committee. And unfortunately, what's happening there is the 2003 law that the governor, I'll just say it, thrust upon us, eliminated all the grandfather provisions that those small cities benefited from, and we're phasing those out. And in this case, they're being phased out faster than we're able to put money in. But I do share your concern on that. I absolutely do, and I think small cities do, and I do think we have some more work to do in that area. the LGA study that's in the bill. This unity proposal is really a temporary thing for this session to try to put some new money into the system and help some communities that were negatively impacted by the 03 changes. But there is a study in the bill, and I'm very hopeful, and I think we heard Mr. Carlson from the League say they're committed to working over the interim and try to bring back a proposal for us that I hope addresses your concerns and mine, and I think the concern of many other people we've heard from as it relates to state aid to cities. You know, there is a relationship, and I think it's not as good as it should be. That fiscal relationship, the state's commitment to our cities is not as strong as it used to be. I think we've kind of fallen down as a state in helping cities provide services and many mandates that we require them to carry out for us. And I'm committed to working with, and I know Senator Scoia is, we've visited about it, with the different stakeholder groups, different groups of cities, to try and bring forth a reform proposal next year that addresses the needs not only of small cities but others that feel like the 2003 changes are very much a hardship for them. So, Senator Sundrum, I share your concern.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would just say, and I think you would agree, the essence of LGA in terms of sharing of the wealth, at least, you would tend maybe to want to share it with the most in need first, and some of these smaller cities are probably the most in need first.
Senator Scoia.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Sundrum, yes, I really do recognize the problems that we have in assessing the needs in these small communities. It's partly due to the large variability that we have between these small communities, and their needs are not uniform enough to really find a formula yet. We'll continue to work on it. I do just want to comment, though, about the money that is going into the LGA bill, and the Chair has talked about the communities that after 2003 really did lose all of their aid. And this bill was a proposal that all of the city groups got together and worked out themselves, the coalition, the Minneapolis, the St. Paul, the suburban communities, the small cities were involved, and they unanimously came forward with this proposal. So while we did make a few changes to it, we did bring it forward. It does add some communities to the formula. And this is the point that I've been trying to make all along, is that as we do add communities, somebody's going to have to pick that up. And we are putting some money in, but there are communities that I think would have or could have or should have seen an increase that really are seeing those smaller zeros or smaller numbers or even a zero. And I think the legislature has its work cut out for us as we try to resolve this local government aid issue. But what it does bring to bear is how important the AIDS program is in keeping property taxes down in our communities, because if we don't supply the aid, it goes on to the property tax levy, and people across Minnesota are unhappy with what's going on in that arena.
Mr. Chair, I would just say that, you know, Mike, and I don't have the numbers, but I'll just say I have six or seven that would receive under this proposal a nice bump, and then I have two that are just zeroed out, and it will be almost impossible to explain that.
Senator Sundrum, I know I have at least two that get zero under this, and I share your concern. Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to there was a question during our recess about whether or not Senator Pogemiller's suggestion about including the term or other facilities in a potential use for a newly enacted memorabilia tax was accepted, and I thought I had indicated yes, but there was some question.
I don't believe we incorporated that into the Vikings recommendations.
Well, then I would just move that amendment, or other public facilities.
The Vikings amendment was what number?
825.
25.
And I had kind of nodded at my agreement, but I hadn't been very clear about that.
I don't believe my goal. Senator Arson, did you feel like we incorporated that?
No, Mr. Chair. We had incorporated the Dibble amendment or proposed amendment, as I recall, but then had not taken that further extension to the Senator Pogue's suggestion.
That had been my intention and kind of dropped it kind of extreme, perhaps, or I didn't indicate my agreement to his suggestion strongly enough. But I think it's a good idea.
Senator Larson, are you moving to reconsider the vote on by which the H-25 amendment was passed?
Well, can I just amend the bill as it is?
Well, I suppose we could, yeah. Yeah, sure. Senator Pogemiller moves. Council will recite the oral amendment.
Mr. Chairman, the amendment would be to an oral addition which had been proposed by Senator Dibble that said, the analysis must also include an evaluation of the use of a new tax on sports memorabilia to finance the facility, and the additional language was, or other public facilities.
Senator Pogemiller, is that your intent? On the Pogemiller oral amendment. Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Pogemiller, they're going to do their analysis based on their facility. How do you want them to expand it to other facilities? Are you talking about memorabilia use tax, the use of it on all facilities? So you're not asking them to piece or facility by facility talk about the increase?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pogemiller.
Just seems like facilities keep coming back here. Target Center, XL. I suppose it'll be 2 or 3 years before the Twin Stadium comes back, but there's always somebody who wants to do something else on the facilities we already have. And so it seems like maybe we ought to consider whether we should be taking care of facilities we already have before we start building new ones.
Senator Pogemiller, are you trying to charge me sales tax on my Dixie Chicks T-shirt that I bought at the XL Center?
How much
the health
was
center, that? Senator Moi needs help at the XL Center. If I had paid my 6.5% sales tax on my Dixie Chicks T-shirt,
it could potentially help the XL.
I think she'd have gotten $2 for the XL Center.
And it might have helped. Might have helped. And
maybe her need wouldn't be so great today.
That's right.
I think that's the intent, Senator Johnson, as we take a look at some of this memorabilia that's sold at different events at these facilities that are struggling with their operating costs, and see if we can give them some authority on the property to generate some additional revenue. Is that Pogemiller? Yes. Is that accurate?
Yes. Yes.
And we take a look at that. On the Pogemiller oral amendment, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails. The oral amendment is adopted. Are there any other amendments to the bill? Senator Marty's the only one that I think didn't get a final opportunity. Senator Pogemiller moves that Senate file 2869 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the Senate floor. Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, can I just ask the status of the A30 amendment?
Senator Ortman, nobody has from revenue has brought me anything yet, and so I don't think the work is done, so maybe it's something we can consider on the floor.
Well, Mr. Chair, I wouldn't want there to be any objections to my raising it on the Senate floor. I don't mean to hold the committee hostage, but I think it's an important amendment. It's an important issue to provide some tax relief to Minnesotans. And I don't think that we should be holding this $150 million for spending. I think we should cut taxes as opposed to increasing spending with that money.
Senator Ortman, I think that's a good floor amendment, and the chair will probably have an amendment to the amendment.
Okay. Then, Mr. Chair, I would withdraw the amendment to be offered at a later date.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pogemiller.
Could we shorten the debate on the floor if we just recessed here until that amendment was ready? Could we deal with it here? That's another option. And then not have it on the floor if we dealt with it here.
Mr. Chair and Senator Pogemiller, the A30 amendment is ready. It's been drafted. It was offered earlier. I don't know what else will be offered to it, but that was my amendment, and that's the one I think is a good proposal, and I think we can vote on.
Senator Ortman, if we offer it today and this committee acts, will you agree to not offer it or something similar on the floor?
Mr. Chair, I think it's a good idea for the state of Minnesota. I'm hoping that this committee will vote for it. If not, then perhaps the whole Senate will. I can't make a decision now. I'd like to see what your amendment would be. I think we're all waiting to see what revenue will do, and we can have a conversation about that.
Senator Pogemiller, I think it's for another day. On the Senate file 2869 as amended, to send it to the Senate floor. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Contrary, no?
No.
Motion prevails. The bill is passed. Thank you, members, and let me say before we adjourn, thank you to all of our Senate staff. They've done a remarkable job, worked some long hours the last few days, and thank you to all of you who had amendments drafted for being considerate of their time. Committee's adjourned.